Tonight, I'm going to do part two of a word that I started actually in November, November 18th. It was called Joshua into the Promise. And part two tonight is Into the Promise, part two, Overcoming Strongholds. And I want to just very briefly look back at the word that I had in November, just to give some highlights to kind of catch us up just a little bit. And I want to start by just saying in 1 Corinthians 10, in verse 6, it says, talks about the things that have happened before. We know what's going on right now, but the things that happened before. And Paul is saying, you know, everything that's happened in the Word, everything that's gone before, the history of our people, it all means something. It means something to us. And he said this, all these things serve as types and pictures for us. In verse 11, he says, we can learn through what they experienced. For we live in a time when the purpose of all the ages past is now completing its goal within us. That's really amazing, if you think about it, that the purpose of all the ages past is now completing its work inside of us. So even the things that happened in the book of Joshua, as we read it tonight, there are things that are still being completed in us because of what happened there. And we talked the last time about the training that Joshua had through his life. You can listen to the tape if you want to hear all of that. But finally, after all the years, they were finally coming to the promise. The promise that had been made to Abraham hundreds of years before. And then Moses spent 40 years in the backside of the desert and then 40 years in the wilderness, and now finally. And some of you may have gotten a promise from God. You know it's God. It's true. He's spoken it to you. You've heard it. It's been prophesied over you, and you're waiting. None of us have waited 480 years or however long that's been. But sometimes it feels like that if we're waiting. So here they are, finally, the nation of Israel. Moses is dead, and God says to Joshua, okay, you're it. You're up next. And here we go. We're going into the promise. There was one problem. The promised land was occupied by the enemy who thought it belonged to him. God says it's yours. The enemy is occupying that space right now, and he thinks he owns it. And there are baby things in our lives as well. God's given us that promise. Here we are. We're finally going, and we get there, and we're looking for milk and honey. And what we see is the enemy occupying what God has promised to us, what he told us is ours. And so God starts right off saying to Joshua at the beginning, be strong, be courageous, over and over and over again. Be strong, be courageous, be strong, be courageous. I don't know how many times in that first chapter of Joshua, be strong and courageous. That's a hint. When God starts saying things to you over and over and over again, pay attention, because what it is he's saying, you're going to need to remember. And so right at the get-go, here they are, right on the cusp of entering into the promised land, and God is saying to Joshua, be strong, be courageous. What he's saying is, there are going to be scary things. There are going to be things that might make you feel weak, but be strong and be courageous. He also told them, be faithful to obey what Moses taught you implicitly. You had a mentor, you learned some things, follow that. Be obedient to the things that you know, the foundation that's been laid in your life, be obedient. And then he said to him, Read and meditate and obey the word. Even in the words for Wendolyn, that was emphasized. We need to hear the word, read the word, meditate on the word, and obey the word. It's part of what we need if we're ever going to enter into the promises that God has told us. But then he gives Joshua these promises. If you do these things, if you be strong and you be courageous, if you remember the foundation that's been laid in your life through other wiser people, if you read my word and meditate on it, here's the promises. No one will defeat you for the rest of your life. That's a promise. I will be with you as I was with Moses. I will never fail or abandon you. What I promised you, I will give you. You will have overwhelming success in everything you undertake. I am your God, and I will be with you wherever you go. That's quite a list of promises. I will take those. Thank you, Lord. I will take them. And then I just want to make note that they were saying, the Lord was saying, you're going forth to occupy. You're not just passing through. You are going forth. This is your promise. This is the land I promised you. I want you to unpack your bags. This isn't a journey like you took a journey through the wilderness. This isn't like that. They never were expected to unpack their bags in the wilderness. But he's saying now, occupy. Occupy the land. And wherever it is God's calling you and whatever the promises that you have, you are called to occupy. Unpack your bags. Put down your roots. Do whatever you need to do to set up that territory. But they had gotten some good news, too. They sent spies in the land, if you remember, too. Joshua understood what it meant to be a spy, if you remember. He was one of the spies that was sent into the land. He understood the worth of that, had some experience. But what they found out was from a very unlikely person, a prostitute named Rahab. And she's like, listen, we are scared to death of you. They had had a different report earlier. But Rahab says to them, we are afraid of you because we have seen what God can do for you and what God can do through you. Do you know the enemy may be in your territory and he may think it's his? But when you start moving in the Spirit of God, when you start doing the things God calls you to do, when you start taking those steps of obedience, the enemy will be afraid of what you can do and what God can do through you. So, here we are. We're going to pick up where we left off, which is in Joshua chapter 5, and I'm reading mostly tonight from the Passion Translation. So Joshua chapter 5, starting in verse 17. It says, when Joshua was near Jericho, he looked up and saw in front of him a man holding a drawn sword. Joshua approached him and said, are you on our side or on the enemy's side? Neither, he replied. I have not come to take sides, but to take charge. Joshua had kind of wandered towards Jericho. It doesn't say why, but he knows God's calling him into this promised land, and there's Jericho standing in the way. Perhaps he was remembering what he'd seen before. He'd been there before, seeing as he was one of the spies. Maybe he was just checking it out. How big are these walls? What exactly does it look like, this place that you're calling me to, God? What does it look like? It doesn't say. The word doesn't tell us, but it says there he was near Jericho. And he may have been remembering, and I want to read to you what it says in Numbers about the good report that he and Caleb had when they returned. So 12 spies went, 10 gave a bad report, 2 gave a good report. And in Numbers 14, starting in verse 6, it says, "And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of some other guy, who were among the scouts who had searched the land, rent their clothes. And they said to the company of Israelites, 'The land through which we passed as scouts is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land to give it to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, neither fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense in the shadow of protection is removed from over them, but the Lord is with us. Fear them not.'" So Joshua and Caleb had a vision. They had eyes to see differently than the rest of the Israelites that spied. They're saying, listen, this is a good land. These people are like bread to us. Don't be afraid. But the congregation wanted to stone Joshua and Caleb with stones. But the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting before all the Israelites. And he said to Moses, "How long will this people provoke me?" We have the answer to that: 40 years. That's the answer to that. They provoked him for 40 years because they didn't go. They didn't go. They had a chance to go, and they didn't go. And so here's Joshua, and this man appears. This was not a dream. This was not a vision. This was, like I'm seeing Valerie sitting in the front row, Joshua saw a man with a sword. That might get your attention. Here he is at Jericho, checking it out, thinking about possibly what he'd seen before in the vision God had given him in the past. Here's a man with a sword. And Joshua approached him and asked a reasonable question, I think. Are you for us or are you against us? And I'm thinking he's probably saying, what posture do I need to take here? Here's a guy with a sword. What's my posture to be? And the man said to him, "I haven't come to take sides. I've come to take charge." What they couldn't do 40 years prior, he's saying, "Yes, I've called you, Joshua. Yes, I've called you to bring this people into the promised land finally, but I'm going to be in charge. You're their leader, but I'm in charge." And you know what the Lord says to us when we're journeying on? He says, "I'm not for or against. I want to be in charge of your journey. I want to be the one who's in charge of your journey." And what that requires is us to say, I surrender. I've tried to figure out my journey. I tried to figure out my own journey for 25 years. It wasn't pretty. Some of you have tried to figure out your own journey. And God is not saying, "I'm for you, I'm against you." He's like, "I want to be in charge of you. I want to be the one who leads you on your journey." And then he identifies himself. He says to Joshua, "I am the commander of Yahweh's armies." Who is that? Well, we know he's not just a man. And we know that because Joshua flings himself to the ground in worship. And he says to him, I will do whatever you command, my Lord. I am going to let you be in charge of this. He's recognizing, you've called me to lead, but this is too big for me. I'm going to let you be in charge of this. And we know it wasn't an angel, and we know it wasn't just a man, because people, men, had bowed down to both of those entities in the past, and they were always told, get up, get off your feet, don't worship me. This did not happen in this case. This did not happen in this case. But Jesus, this was a Christophany. This was the appearance of Jesus Christ in the flesh, saying, I'm going to lead you. Put your trust in me. I'm going to lead you. And so Joshua said, I will do whatever you say to do. And the commander of Yahweh's army said to Joshua, remove your sandals, for you're standing on holy ground. And Joshua obeyed him. When we're standing on holy ground, we better take our shoes off. Sometimes literally. But there are things that need to come off us when we're standing on holy ground. We need to recognize the presence of Jesus Christ. He didn't stop them from worshiping. And it goes on in chapter 6 to say, now the gates of Jericho were bolted and barred because of the Israelites. No one could get out and no one could get in. Jericho was a stronghold. The gates to Jericho were barred. Nobody's getting in there. No help, no rescue, and no one, whether they want to or not, is coming out. This place is bolted and barred. It is a stronghold. First definition. A stronghold is a place that has been fortified so as to protect against attack. A place where a particular cause or belief is strongly held or defended. Is there a stronghold in your life on the path to your promise? Is there a place that's bolted and locked before you where you can't get in? Nothing can come out. Joshua's facing a stronghold. And Yahweh commanded Joshua and said, see, I have given Jericho, its king, and its mighty warriors into your hands. Now Joshua was standing there looking at Jericho with bolted and barred gates. And Jesus says to him, see, I've given you Jericho, I've given you the king, and I've given you his warriors. That is not what Joshua's natural eye is seeing. What he is seeing is a stronghold with bolted gates. Sometimes God requires faith for us to see into the Spirit, to see what has already been done in the Spirit that we don't see with our natural eye. There are some of you here that God is saying, see, you are healed. See, you have money in your bank account. See, you have peace of mind. See, you have, look what I've given you. And what your natural eye is seeing is your doctor bills, in your aches and your pains, in your overdrawn checking account. And God is saying, see? He wants to give us eyes to see what's not yet happened. And to be able to believe those things because he's promised it to us. They were entering into the promised land. It was not just something. It was not just a, oh, I wish I had. It was God who had said, this is yours. What has he said to you is yours. What has he spoken to you is yours. What has the word told you is yours. Regardless of what you see, regardless of what it looks like or feels like, or even what other people are saying, I don't see that. I don't see. What are you talking? I don't see that. Be practical. And God is saying, have faith. Because the thing I've promised is already done outside of time. I believe, and we just have to enter into it. So it's a new day. And when it's a new day for all of us, there's a new way. A new day requires a new way. The old way was the 40 years in the wilderness, and although Joshua and Caleb came back with a good report about the land, and who God was and who the enemy was, Caleb said, all right, let's go. Let's kill these. Let's do it. They probably could have accomplished that if the nation had gotten behind that good report and said, yeah, let's do that. But they didn't. They tried to stone the ones bringing the good report. And so there's now a new way. The old way didn't work. The old way had no faith attached to it. And God is saying, see, I'm attaching faith to this new way. And I believe this new way was a foreshadowing of some New Testament truth about how to take down a stronghold and how to deal with the enemy. There were three things God said: the city itself, the king, and the warriors. The city itself, I believe, was a stronghold. And in 2 Corinthians 10:3-5, it says the way to deal with a stronghold is to tear it down. I want to read. Amen. In 2 Corinthians 10, it's starting in verse 3, it says, for although we live in the natural realm, we don't wage a military campaign employing human weapons, using manipulation to achieve our aims. Instead, our spiritual weapons are energized with divine power to effectively dismantle the defenses behind which people hide. We can demolish every deceptive fantasy that opposes God and break through every arrogant attitude that is raised up in defiance of the true knowledge of God. We capture like prisoners of war every thought and insist that it bow in obedience to the Anointed One. Since we are armed with such dynamic weaponry, we stand ready to punish any trace of rebellion as soon as you choose complete obedience. The tearing down of a stronghold. The second thing was the king. And I think that goes with Matthew 12:29, that says the second way to wage war is to bind the strong man. You tear down the stronghold, you bind the strong man. And then in Mark 16, it says the third thing you do is cast out demons, which were the warriors that were mentioned. You tear down the stronghold, you bind the strong man, and you cast out demons. God had a battle plan, and he was about to give Joshua a supernatural, illogical plan of action. Because even though he was living in the natural realm, he was not going to wage a military campaign in the way that they had ever fought any other battle before. He was going to dismantle, demolish, break through, and capture. And there were things, it says, that were hidden in this stronghold. I think the first things that hide in a stronghold are strong men and demons hiding in a stronghold. And I'll tell you what, the enemy loves to hide. He doesn't want to be exposed. He doesn't want you to know who he is. He wants to hide. And I see in this time, many of us have been tearing down strongholds. We've been doing this work of saying, nope, we're not going to have this stronghold. We're going to break generational curses that's been part of a structure, a stronghold in our lives. We're tearing down. And the things that are hiding behind that stronghold are beginning to be exposed. And the things that do not come to the surface on their own, I just keep getting a picture of God reaching down, taking these things by the scruff of the neck and forcing them to the surface because they cannot hide any longer. God is exposing the enemy that's been hiding behind these strongholds. It says at the very end here, we stand ready to punish any trace of rebellion as soon as you choose complete obedience. Our first thing to do to tear down a stronghold is obey. Let me read that again. We stand ready to punish any trace of rebellion as soon as you choose complete obedience. It doesn't even mean you say you've done it yet. It's that your heart is saying, I am choosing to obey. Already, you're taking bricks out of that wall. By your choosing to say, I'm going to obey you, God, whether I understand it or not, whether it's rational or not, because I'll tell you, the plan God came up with, as I said before, is not logical. It's not practical. It's not human. It's divine, a divine plan. And I know in each one of our lives, mine included, God has a divine plan to take down the strongholds in your life. And it may not seem rational, and it may not make sense to you. The key here is, Lord, whatever you tell me, I'm going to obey. Whatever you tell me, whether it makes sense to me or not. Okay? At 3 o'clock, Lisa, I want you to get in your car and go to Wegmans. Are you going to obey? It doesn't have to make sense to you. But complete obedience is the beginning of the battle. Rebellion is being punished when we obey. And it's a battle in our mind. The former fear that the Israelites had of the giants they saw, even though they had the report of Joshua and Caleb, kept them from entering in at that time. God wants to dismantle, demolish, break through, and capture. Who or what is hiding behind the stronghold in your life? If you don't know, are you brave enough to ask? God, will you show me? Will you expose what it is, Lord, so that I can fight? And so God gives him a plan. This plan will demonstrate the power of God and not the might of man. Because there is no human weaponry involved. So God says to him, okay, here's the plan. March around the city with all your men of war once a day for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry shofars in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priests blowing the shofars. When you hear the blare of the shofars, have all the people shout with a mighty shout of joy, and then the walls of the city will collapse before your eyes. Reasonable, right? What war room are we in? March around the city, blow shofars, on the 7th day, shout, and the walls will collapse. Tear down strongholds. Tear down strongholds. And so they begin. They have the presence of God with them, the ark that contains the presence of God. We had better be assured of the presence of God in our lives before we start any battle, regardless of whether it's a natural or supernatural battle. The presence of God is the number one thing. And then 7 priests, 7 shofars, 7 days. 7 is the number of perfection. 7 times around. God's ways are perfect. Our thoughts are not his thoughts. Our ways are not his ways. And his ways are perfect. He said later on, I want forward guards and rear guards before the ark and behind the ark. And I'm like, Lord, speak to me about this. And the Lord said, don't you know there's an angelic host before you and behind you when you go to war? When I call you into battle, that there is a supernatural presence that is around you all the time when it's my battle. Let me tell you this. Heaven will tell the tale of how many times your lives have been saved. Heaven will tell the tale. Because you have had angels before you and you have had angels behind you. I don't have permission to tell this, so Ed, who I know is watching, please forgive me. The Lord has been taking him on walks. Our brother Ed Jilliff has been taking him on walks, and he obeys the Lord. And recently, he was going away that he had never been before, and he started seeing dozens of Nerf darts wherever he went. So many that it caught his attention. It was like on this street, and the next day a different street on that street, and the next day a different street on that street, and there were over 20, I don't remember the exact number, Nerf darts. And the Lord said to him, these are the ones that never hit you. The darts that the enemy has shot at you, they're on the ground. These are the ones that have never hit you. And when we start out on the battle that God calls us to, on the journey that he calls us to, there's going to be a forward guard and a rear guard around us. Let me just say this. Don't choose your own battles. This was a battle God had was calling Joshua and then Israelites to. Be careful. Make sure it's a battle God is calling you to. And then Ed comes to a place in the road, and there is a mark of tar on the road that looks exactly like a serpent with a forked tongue, flattened on the road. I have a picture if you want to see it after. And the Lord said to him, see, I told you. And he can say that to many of us. See, I told you. And then the people had to be silent for 6 days. This would be hard. They're marching around. I read that the perimeter of Jericho is about 4 miles. So they're marching around. Not making a sound. Psalm 46:10 says, be still and know that I am God. Remember, he had said to Joshua, I'm here to take charge. And I'm like, Lord, in that silence, what was happening? And the Lord said to me, they were taking their thoughts captive. Because here's Jericho. And their leaders told them this story. Here's the battle plan. And I don't care how much faith they had, there had to be one or two at least that were like, this guy is nuts. And so they're walking and they're silent. And you know, when you're doing something that in obedience to God, there's a voice here telling you all kinds of things. So I can only imagine, as they're going, who and what was coming into their thought pattern. And I believe in those 6 days of silence, they were taking their thoughts captive to say, God, I believe you. I don't understand this, but I believe you. It doesn't make sense to me, but I believe you. I'm going to keep going. Even though I don't see anything happening yet, I'm going to keep going. And then he said, on the 7th day, walk around 7 times. That's quite a trip. And shofars are blowing. And Joshua said, when I give the word, I want you to give the shout of a lifetime. And there's a word, teruah, that is that shout. And it means 2 things. It means a shout of war, and it means a shout of joy. It's both. Give the shout of war, and give the shout of joy. Yes, we're defeating the enemy. And yes, praise God, we are defeating the enemy. It's war, and it's joy. And what happened? The very thing that God said would happen. All of a sudden, the walls came down. Archaeologists have proved they didn't fall out. Al made mention of this in one of the last 2 sermons. They didn't fall out or in. They went down. There was a sound. There is a sound that defeats the enemy. Sometimes it's the sound of silence. Sometimes it's a shout of war. Sometimes it's a shout of joy. But when we make that sound, whatever it is, that stronghold that's been in our lives, he promises will come down. It says that they marched in, right straight in, and that they did what God had told them to do, which was take no prisoners and keep no spoil. Keep no spoil because there were not meant to be any trophies so that any man can say, hey, look what I did. Look at this. Look, wow, did you hear me shout? It was a good shout. Did you hear that? No. Take no prisoners. Take no spoil. And the other thing was, do not rebuild Jericho ever. Once your stronghold is down, you need to be intentional to keep it down. You can't play with the things you used to play with. You can't do the things you used to do. You have got to be intentional and say, Lord, you have brought this down. You've brought it down in my bloodline. You have set me free from this. It's going to stay down. And he said afterwards, after the walls had come down, Joshua pronounced this solemn oath. May Yahweh curse anyone who attempts to rebuild this city, Jericho. He will pay for laying its foundation with the life of his oldest son and for setting up its gates with his youngest son. That happened. In 1 Kings 16:34, it says, in his days, Hiel the Bethelite built Jericho. He laid his foundations at the cost of the life of Abiram, his firstborn, and set up its gates with the loss of his youngest son, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke through Joshua, the son of Nun. When God gives a warning, when God gives a directive, we need to obey. And one of the things he's saying to us is, don't rebuild what I've torn down. Don't put one brick back in place. Don't go back to that place. Don't pick up that book. Don't look at that thing. Don't take that drink. Don't associate with that person.